Bill Wiley, J.C. Magic, Jim Gresham, Mason, William Jennings Bryan, and Clarence E. Hart. Now, just the very mention of these names, that if you know anything at all about their background, you see enormous difference in their temperament. Now, actually, J. Frank Norris, and I can speak with some authority here, because when I was a boy growing up in Texas, he did his time at First Baptist Church in Fort Worth. And believe me, he was a thorn in the side of Texas Baptist years. And that's what you hear now. He was a man who was given to great sensationalism. Irresponsible and acrimonious attacks on enemies. He didn't have an easy way to tilt it back to his parents, that's just the way it is. He did not hesitate to attack anybody or anything if it could add to his own stature in his sensational way. He actually killed an unarmed man in his study. So that shows you the extreme to which he went, and I'll make more reference to that later. On the other hand, you had people like Clarence E. McCartney, the old Presbyterian of Pittsburgh, a man who was a very much of a Christian gentleman. In all of this controversy, he never lost his equilibrium like some of these others. The father himself said that he was always treated courteously and kindly by this man, Clarence E. McCartney. And I think he was the epitome of propriety. He wore his Geneva robe. Now, some of these men left their denominations in angry protest, while others remained stubbornly faithful to their churchly ties. Some welcomed the title fundamentalist, and others wanted to be free of it. They all believed in the doctrine of original sin, but one thought that mankind deserves to be trusted, and that the heart of man is essentially sound, but some would admit to the communion table only those who had been baptized by immersion, while another, mind you, in a Baptist class, would welcome all who would come, including non-Christians. So they ran the gamut, you see. Well, actually, representing the militant, very radical wing of fundamentalism, you would have J. Frank Morris of Fort Worth and John Wilkes Brayton of New York City. They were belligerent, and in Norris's case, they were actually violent. Now, Norris was the minister of the First Baptist Church of Fort Worth, and he also at the same time served the Temple Baptist Church in Detroit, and he was the mediator between those two churches. And he built an empire, believe me, down in Texas, when he was in his prime, he was a force to be reckoned with. The Fort Worth Church grew to 12,000 members by 1928. By 1946, Norris boasted that his two congregations together had a membership of some 25,000. Now, he had a Baptist Bible Institute running there in Fort Worth, which had 500 students. Eventually, he had about 3,000 churches of his own scattered over Gavinia, Texas, as I well remember. These were highly independent churches. They were not at all, they would have been called dead, being aligned with Southern Baptist Convention. They were highly independent, but he was a very charismatic type person who could inspire almost fanatical devotion or fanatical hatred, as the case might be. He was sensational and melodramatic. He was able to get his people to do all kinds of things. They made something like about 1,000 visits per week, his members did. When he was called to Fort Worth, a member who opposed his coming said, "If this man comes here, there will be the all-firedest explosion ever witnessed in this world. We are at peace with the world, the flesh, the devil, and with one another." Well, it wasn't very long. When Norris got there, he was never a man to be, in fact, he was totally miserable unless he was in a big fight. And so he was not one to have such peace. He did not hesitate to fire people from his finger board. I hope you don't quite find that. He attacked the Roman Catholic mayor of Fort Worth, and then when one of the mayor's friends came to his study, a sharp word was exchanged, and Norris reached into his desk drawer and pulled out the revolver and shot the man dead right there in his study. Now this is the kind of person we're dealing with.
He didn't attack the mayor verbally, or did
he? It's verbally. But you see, he did this very often. He would attack people all the time in his book. Nothing was sacred. Well, then he was brought to trial for this, and I remember great fanfare attended this trial. And his congregation, mind you, raised $16,000 for his legal defense. He was acquitted. He vigorously attacked Southern Baptist leaders. He called Dr. Truett an infallible Baptist pope. He referred to Wallace Baptist, who at that time was a Christian church in Dallas, as that old baboon. He quoted Dr. F. M. McConnell, editor of the Baptist Standard of Texas, the old woman who does the best she can. He quoted Louis D. Houston of Atlanta, and some of you know him, who was in Ruby Hill Church in Atlanta for so long. Well, when he was elected president of the Southern Baptist Convention, old Norris Toulouse, he said the prophet Isaiah is at last fulfilled. Children shall be your leaders and things your rulers. So he was a person who always had the worst kind of infection to suit the occasion. He had failed Senator Robson Hill, the editor of the Atlanta Constitution, who in my judgment was one great journalist of the South. I've always been a great admirer of Robson Hill. Well, he failed him. Now the problem with Norris was that he was utterly without principle. He said on one occasion, I was making an alliance with the devil if he was going my way. He went to preach with the Calvary Church in New York City with John Rose Creighton. They were in the federal revival. He back claimed that he had 500 converts, and even John Rose Creighton couldn't take that. He said, Brother Frank, stop lying. It's time to be your help. So this is the kind of, that he represents, of course, the extreme fundamentalist at this time. Now, William Bell Riley, old Dr. W.B. Riley, was a power in Minneapolis, Minnesota, the First Baptist Church there. He was another one of them. He was probably the most conservative of the group theologically. I don't think J. Frank Norris was very much of a theologian at all. I don't think he concerned himself too much with matters of theology. He was too busy being a sensationalist to get down to very much a consistent theological study, although he was a very brilliant man. And the irony was that when he preached, if you could get him to stay away from missing and attacking people, he was a powerful preacher in the book. You know, it's a sad thing, really, when a person has great gifts and they are misused. And here's a prime example of a man who could have been, if he could have remained free of his venom and his infection, he could have been a very powerful and persuasive religious leader. Well, yes?
Well, did he go to Southern?
That's correct. He went to Southern School. He was Bobby was there, and he did well. He had a very fine mind. I think he had ever just put himself to the business of preaching and theological reflection all the rest. He probably would have done very well indeed.
I've already got some slides that I'm just still preaching for a lot of time.
Are you ready to?
No.
Well, I remember him. I still remember hearing him. Over the radio, I didn't go to the first church for the word, but of course, he was broadcasting everywhere in Texas when I was a boy growing up down there. And he was a very dramatic and powerful preacher, believe me. It's a tragedy that the man with that kind of gift simply misused it so fully, and he fell victim to his own personal animosity. Well, you have people like J.C. Massey and also Clarence McCartney reflecting the more moderate leadership of this group. Now, William Jennings Bryan was also in the four of this crowd. He was the politician of the seven. To me, William Jennings Bryan has always been a kind of a pathetic figure. And I don't say this in some condescending, patronizing way, but I think the man was a rather pathetic in a way. Very gifted, a superb orator in the form of the old-fashioned political oratory. Three times the Democratic standard bearer of the presidency of the United States, defeated those three times. He was a typical American booster type, actually, highly optimistic about man and his future. And despite his alliance with fundamentalism, he was more influenced by the political current than by the Bible. Now, all these men had a strong sense of individuality, as you can imagine. They were distrustful of others. They were utterly convinced of the correctness of their own beliefs. And they built religious empires in several cases, largely around themselves, more than around any carefully arranged theology. They became persons of controversy as they split churches and schools and denominations. Now, as I told you, Norris was a real thorn in the side with Texas Baptist for many, many years. However, there were several factors that held them together in a kind of loosely bound union. Theologically, they were united in their fervent belief in the supernatural and in their hatred for theological liberalism. Several of these men developed a very hard, arrogant attitude. I guess you would say they were not normally doctrinal innovators. Rather, they energized existing conservative Protestant orthodoxy. Their aggressive and acrimonious attitudes seem to be their hallmark. They made absolutely no allowance for divergent points of view. They saw no gradation in the evils they condemned. It's rather amusing to me concerning movies in the theater. They never occurred to them to give any false, the good versus bad movies. The irrationality of their attitude was pointed out years later when somebody said one of the unexpected blessings of television is that it lets the fundamentalists catch up on all the movies they have been behind. So that shows you something of the ludicrous nature of it all. Now, to what extent were these leaders influential? Well, their impact was wide enough eventually to lose the battle to the liberals. Now, the clergymen among these conservatives, the fundamentalists, remember, some of their clergymen serve the largest congregations in the world. However, it ought to be said these were far more preaching centers than autonomous congregations in which lay persons participated. If you put this on the way to the top, I don't know if you don't need to bring the blood farm and they can do quite well. It'd be almost equivalent to saying the majority is the Lord of God. The majority is the Lord of this kind of thing. But actually, these people, they were forces to be reckoned with. Now, when you think of anybody in a pastoral role, Frank Norris has never in this world, by even the most stretch of the imagination, qualifies to be called a quote pastor of a congregation. He was too busy living here and there. And he moved from Fort Worth to Detroit regularly and preached to both congregations, and I don't suppose he ever really concerned himself very much at all with the pastor affair of his people. He was too much in the throes of controversy and in the limelight of one thing. Frank Norris, W.B. Riley, and J. Gresham Machen founded schools from which graduates went out. These leaders wrote books, they published newspapers, periodicals, and journals. But despite all this, they suffered some notable defeats. For one thing, they lost the popular verdict when Bobby was forced out of his Presbyterian pulpit. They lost the public judgment at Sidney. They can tell us in 1925, the Scopes trial. You know, that has a lot more impact in American intellectual history than we often imagine. That was not simply some sideshow going on over there at Dayton, although it had the characteristics of it in the way that trial was conducted. And poor old William Jennings Bryan was there for that Scopes trial. Well, this group lost the struggle also at Princeton when a new seminary was organized.
You're talking about William Jennings Bryan being on the Senate fingers. He was even more so after the elevation.
Yes, he did. You know, that book trial was quite something. It brought together an interesting galaxy. It took place in July over there, in Dayton, Tennessee, in that little hot school. And Clarence Darrow was the attorney for and then you had William Jennings Bryan, who was representing the other side. And as I was going to point out, the tragedy, Robert, at this point, not a single one of these fundamental leaders I've been talking about today, not a single one of them in that time. Poor old Bryan was left totally alone to battle for himself. And then, of course, only died about there who after the trial was all over. And he, at the time he was there, he had been in the courtroom for 26 years. He had left an invalid wife at home. In many ways, he was a pathetic figure. And these people who served up so much